Well, it's that time of year, that time of year when it gets cold outside, and for some reason, when you walk on a carpet or a rug and you shuffle your feet, and then you touch a doorknob or something, you get those annoying little pricks. I'm not talking about the people who work at the Registry of Motor Vehicles. I'm talking about that electrical little spark that you get, you know, when you touch things. I could use that, actually. I need a little electrical spark to get me going in the morning.
Ron Van Dam is an experienced talk show host. Do not attempt to try this at home.
Well, that's debatable.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Mm-hmm. Things can get a bit weird.
Yes, they can.
If you like that sort of thing.
I don't know what I like anymore.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you, Julie. Thank you. Welcome to the program, everybody. Well, today's a special day, not that I want it to be, but today happens to be my birthday.
Oh!
I know. I have long since stopped celebrating my birthday a long time ago. Birthdays are fine when you're young, you know. You turn 5 years old, your mother invites kids over to the house, they put on pointy little hats, and they eat cake, and they go home, and it's just really so stupid. That's when I knew, when I was a kid, that this whole birthday thing is absolutely absurd. It's just an excuse for people to come over and make fools out of themselves, you being the head fool, quite obviously. Yeah, my mother, she was only doing what mothers thought they were supposed to do. I remember it was so awful. I was 5 years old, I think, I don't know. And they had these little cardboard cones that you put on your head, and there was an elastic strap that you put under your chin, and it just, nobody looks intelligent with a cone on their head with elastic strapped to their chin. It's just, no one looks respectable like that. And then your friends come over, and they're not your friends. They're your mother's friends' kids. Although you don't know half these people. Even at 5 years old, I didn't like these kids. Like, it's my birthday. Why are you doing this to me? Isn't this supposed to be a pleasant day? And the kids would have little cones on their heads, too. Sometimes the cones wouldn't be as big as the cone that would be on the birthday boy's head. But we all look like a bunch of idiots from outer space that just landed, staring at each other, saying, what the hell are we doing here? This was all for the parents. It had nothing to do with the kid. The kids didn't care. The parents cared. The kids didn't care. And then I would open up presents, and they were things that I didn't want. I don't even remember what they were. I think I busted them all within the first 2 weeks. But then came the special part of the day where my mother would bring out ice cream and cake. And that was fine, but I kept saying to myself, why do I have to enjoy my ice cream and cake with all these fools here sitting around me with cones on their head? The big game back then when I was growing up was pin the tail on the donkey, or as I call it now, find the ass on the animal. That's what we were doing. We were 5-year-old kids with sharp objects in our hands trying to focus in on the ass of an animal. Put it in perspective, it's unbelievable. Blindfold kids put a sharp object in their hands and have the goal be to stick it in the donkey's ass. And if you do, people applaud and they think you're very talented. Of course, these kids grow up, they're adults, and their only talent is to stick sharp objects on the ass of an animal. That's all they can do. That's all they were trained to do. Birthdays are horrible. I know that I had a birthday when I was 1 year old and 2 years old. I don't remember that. Well, that wasn't for me. It was for the parents. Stop making believe that you're doing it for the child. This is for my child. My child's going to love this. Your child doesn't even know that they're alive at this point. They're not going to remember this. I'm sorry. I'm getting so upset because it's my birthday. The only two birthdays that made any sense to me, 16 years old, I was able to get a driver's permit and I could drive a car. To me, that was everything. I looked forward to that birthday greatly. Also, it was around the time when I was very sexually interested. So there was a lot of discovering going on. And then, of course, the other significant birthday is 21, where now you're an adult legally by the laws of the land, by the king and queen of the United States. Now you're a legal adult, and you can pretty much do whatever you want, and now it's your responsibility. That's really an emancipation birthday for the parents, really, more than it is for the child. But what do you do on your 21st birthday? You go out and you have a drink, because now you can legally drink. And it was, I remember that, and it was a very freeing experience. I had my whole life in front of me. I was now a free man. It was like I was in chains before. Now I'm a free man. I can roam the earth. That was the last birthday that I enjoyed. Every birthday in succession of that was a celebration of becoming older and a little more decrepit than I was the year before. Then you start really dreading your birthday when you turn 30. It's all over. I'm 30 years old. I'm getting old. That's what I felt when I was 30. Now looking back on 30, it was like, sorry, what was I upset about there? Then when you turn 50 years old, a deep depression falls into place. All of a sudden, the blue skies become very dark and gloomy. You say to yourself, half my life is over. Actually, it's more than half your life in most cases. It's a depressing time. Your body starts telling you things like, I'm not going to work for you anymore. I'm sorry, but I'm going to start falling apart, and there's nothing much you can do about it. And every birthday after 50 is something where you just become, you're delusionally just not even paying attention to it. And that's where I am. I'm delusionally not paying attention to it because it doesn't really matter. Because indeed, you know, every day is your birthday. You're older every single day, but you're also wiser. So this is my birthday. People come up to me and say, happy birthday. And I just let it soak in. I don't cause a scene. I could go through this whole explanation to everybody that I meet. In other words, what I'm saying is, thanks for recognizing me once a year only. But at the same time, just don't do that anymore. If you could, just let's leave this birthday just to me as a private introspection of my existence. Let's not make a deal out of this like we're going to go ride a pony, because it's not that anymore. Actually, since the invention of Facebook, now when it's your birthday, everybody who you don't know starts congratulating you. So now birthdays mean that much less. Oh, I've been congratulated on my birthday by over 600 people. I only know 6 people.
Yes, of course you could have a podcast show host who's congenial and conversational and talks to you like you're both on the same level and discussing the issues of the day. But come on, isn't having a grumpy old bastard who hates just about friggin' everything way better? This is the Ron Van Dam Show.
Yeah, it's my birthday.
Just a perfect day. Drink sangria in the park. And then later, when it gets dark, we go home. Just a perfect day. Feed animals in the zoo. Then later, a movie too, and then home. Oh, it's such a perfect day.
Oh, yeah, it is.
I'm glad I spent it with you.
I spent it with you.
Oh, such a perfect day.
Oh,
you just keep me hanging on. You just keep.
Oh, stop it, stop it.
Are you aware that 1 in every 7 Americans is in desperate need of a dope slap? Studies show that every 17 seconds in America, someone writes, says, or does something so incredibly stupid that they deserve to be slapped, and you can help. If someone you know commits an act of boneheaded stupidity, simply extend your hand with the palm facing to the side, draw your arm back, and deliver a sharp, solid blow straight across their forehead. It's called a dope slap. It only takes a moment to perform, but the lesson can last a lifetime. This has been a message from the American Dope Slap Association and Metro South Podcasting.
Yeah? Oh? Oh? We accept Visa, MasterCard, and Discover. Oh.
Makes you want to use your credit card, doesn't it? Coming up a little bit later in the program, not too long from now, we're going to be speaking to a National Geographic. They have a great new publication out. I love National Geographic. We've interviewed them many times before. We have a hookup here. And I just love them, because you don't have to read all that much. The pictures are so cool that, you know, I need to be enticed into reading something. If someone says to me, Ron, sit down and read this, will you? I respond by saying no. But if there is a picture of something and I'm attracted to the picture, then I will sit down and read about what the picture is about. I am more enticed to do so. And I will let my guard down and actually read something. So National Geographic does that to me. Do you remember there was a time, you probably don't remember because you're probably not old enough. I don't even think I was old enough at the time. But there was a point where National Geographic was actually almost pornographic. And I don't mean that in a negative sense, but there were pictures in National Geographic of usually African women bearing their breasts. And National Geographic got away with it because that was actually the way that people dressed in other cultures like that. But there were kids, little kids, who said,
look, the lady's breasts are showing.
Of course, the breasts would be ornate with all types of jewelry and things like that. But yet, you could see the breasts. The breasts were just there. And National Geographic got away with that. And for that period of time, back in the 50s, I believe, that was quite something. But no one could argue with that. There was a lot of censorship, but nobody could argue with the fact that there were some tribes in Africa and in other cultures and countries where women walked around with their breasts showing. And that's just the way it was. But I have a feeling that kids just love that stuff. Of course, when you get older, you know, you go, oh, there's some breasts, not a big deal. I've definitely reached that plateau in my life. There's no question about it. I do remember a time in my childhood. Ron, are you sure you want to talk about this publicly? I remember a time in my childhood where those kinds of things were exhilarating. You would see a Playboy magazine, and that was the big thing. Kids would hide the Playboy magazine under their beds. I'm talking about young boys, basically. But they would have a Playboy magazine somewhere with some provocative pictures in it. And the kids use this in order to educate themselves physically, if you know what I mean. And National Geographic, there were some of those pictures in there too. There could have been. But I definitely have reached the age and maturity where to see these things now in a picture, it's just not a big deal. It's just, so what? You know, like, and it's just amazing to me that at one point in my life, I was enticed by these things, these images, and now it's like, yeah, so what? What's the big deal? So what? I've seen a lot of them in my lifetime, and to be honest with you, kind of all look alike, and what's the big deal? It's a part of the body. What are we talking about here? What's the big whoop? What's the big deal? Show me something I haven't seen. Seriously? Come on. I mean, show me a picture of a filet mignon sitting on a bed of asparagus and hollandaise sauce with some risotto. Now you're talking some stimulation. But naked breasts? Seriously? What's the big deal? I mean, what are you parading around in front of me? Something that you already have, everybody has, and what's the big deal with you? Boy, have things changed. You agree with me? Hey, come on, come on. Oh, come on. All right, maybe it's just me. That's unfortunate. Hello, Kitson. How are you today?
I'm great, thanks. How are you?
I'm great. Kitson Jadzinka joins us now. It's National Geographic Kids, Histories, Mysteries. And this is the newest addition to the series. Tell us what this one is about.
So at National Geographic Kids, you know, the whole point is like sharing the world in a very colorful, exciting, adventurous way. And this book is all about kind of investigating and reconstructing fascinating mysteries of history, from sunken ships and stories of UFOs and monsters, yes, mysterious messages from thousands of years ago, and even things like hidden treasure.
Okay, I'm always fascinated as to how this is for kids. I mean, it is for kids, but it's like, I'm not a kid and I'm fascinated by this. So,
well, I kind of feel the same way. And I think, you know, I'm often criticized, at least by my family, for asking too many questions all the time. And I think that's part of it. Like, the spirit of these books is all about, like, really exploring curiosity. Mm-hmm. And I know for me personally, I've never lost that sense of wonder when I come across something mm-hmm. wacky or weird or amazing. I stop and linger, and I kind of feel like that's what this book is about. It's like looking at these things we think we know a little bit about what happened, yeah. and looking deeper.
You know, it's interesting because some things from the past, when you go back far enough, some of the sea creatures and some of the lost continents, those kinds of things. I don't even know if that was fictional work or whether those things actually existed. That's my curiosity. I get kind of a blur.
It definitely blurs, and that's one of the things we looked into, mm-hmm. particularly pulling out the way the book is formatted. We get background and details, but then we really kind of go deep, pulling out actual clues that yes. kind of support theories, yep. and then we kind of covered lots of theories, like, you know, is the Bermuda Triangle mm-hmm. really the work of aliens?
Exactly.
Some people believe that's true, but on the other hand, you know, scientists believe maybe it's from, like, massive gassy bubbles that formed craters right. in the bottom of the ocean. Yeah. So who knows?
Who knows? I love the way the book is formatted, again, as an adult, because it's you know, it gives a child a sense of mental organization where, all right, here's a subject matter. Let's look at the background. Let's look at the details. Let's look at the theories. Let's look at the clues. And then come to our own opinion and analysis. This helps a child actually put their thoughts into a series that helps them understand, investigate, gives them all the background and facts necessary to make decisions. That is such a great basic way of looking at things that I wasn't taught as a child.
I think so too. And I do think that was sort of the thinking behind it, is to provide lots of information mm-hmm. and lots of, you know, different points of views, and then kind of lead the reader, and in every case, the writer. I was right there, you know, in the trenches thinking right. this way, but also leading to the point, which is, now that you know all this, what do you think?
Yeah.
You know, what is kind of leading into a moment of critical thinking.
Which is important these days, because with all this internet crap, and I'm sorry to phrase it that way, but it's true, you come to a conclusion before you even know what you're talking about. And that's a horrible thing. And I'm glad that this book kind of retrains people not to jump to conclusions and just make decisions on nothing.
I had a kind of a weird cosmic experience when I was writing this book, mm-hmm. and I actually just finished writing the second one in the series, which is more of the same. And that was just that all of these stories, I don't know, I guess I just had this overwhelming sense of oneness with the world, because all of these stories are taking place right here on our planet, mm-hmm. right under our feet. Mm-hmm. And even the mysteries that took place thousands of years ago, in ways, they're still here with us.
Right.
And it just kind of, I don't know, it just made me feel like the Earth was more my neighborhood.
Yeah, I get it. I get what you're saying. And as usual with National Geographic, I mean, you know, it goes without saying that the pictures are incredible, the photographs, the background. Some of them are of locations that I had never seen before that supported various things. I do National Geographic just to save myself on airfare and traveling the world. I just open up the magazine, pretty much good right there.
I'm the same way.
I mean, you know, I tell you, it's just crazy. I'm flipping through it now, and it's like, we can talk later. I want to continue reading here, but we can't do that. How much of a staff is required to put something like this together? It seems rather complicated.
It's a complicated process. There's a lot of different people involved, and you know, I spend a lot of time in schools talking to children about writing books, and you know, I always make that point that, you know, it's certainly not just me. There's editors and photo editors. In this case, there were, you know, there was an artist commissioned to do the beautiful illustration of that Kraken on the cover, that giant, giant, giant squid.
Yeah.
And, you know, even down the line to the people who do the behind-the-scenes production and the printing and the boxing and the delivering. And there's a lot goes into making a book like this.
Yeah.
But, you know, we started with kind of a monster list of ideas, and the of course, the design and photography folks have a lot to say, because of course, like you were saying with National Geographic, it's very visual. So the stories that we chose to use in the book also had to support, you know, they had to have, we had to have good enough photographs and illustrations available. So that, you know, that played a part.
Yeah. So some of which I didn't even know some of these things existed, like the Georgia Guidestones.
That's a weird one.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of like the American Stonehenge, I guess, in a way. But I had never heard of that before. I was fascinated by this. And again, I'm older than 10.
Well, I think that's the beauty of a book like this, is that even within the, you know, even within the group, the categories of different levels of children's readers, there's something in here for everybody. Even if you're just flipping through, reading the facts that are, you know, in bigger print, or you know, looking at the pictures, or reading it through in one sitting.
That's great.
I don't think there's an age limit on a book like this.
Yeah, it's almost like you could print the book and then you could have a little sticker and just with the words "kids" on it, and put the sticker on the publication if there's a kid looking at it, and if not, you don't use the kid sticker, and it's still the same book.
Right. For sure. I definitely, I definitely had a lot of people. I left this on my dining, you know, my coffee table in my living room, and people of all different ages have gravitated towards
it. Yes, they have.
It's
great, and I do recommend it. It's available everywhere, I assume.
Yeah, all the usual places.
Okay, perfect. Kitson, thank you so much for your conversation today, and we look forward to the next edition. We can probably talk to you then, but this is great, especially with the holidays coming up. I'm not trying to sell the book or anything, but it's just something that I think would be fantastic for many members of the family. Thank you so much for your time today. Oh, is there a website we can visit to get more information about this one?
Yeah, there. You know, even just nationalgeographic.com in the kids section of the website.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Perfect. Have a great one. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, we're out of time for today. God, no. Say it isn't so, Ron. Well, thank you very much for that reaction, but it is so. This has been a wonderful experience maybe not actually. I'm going to go off now and celebrate my birthday by sticking a candle in my butt and standing in a closet listening to elevator music. This should be exciting. I do this every year. And I'll be with you again tomorrow if you so choose to indulge me. I hope you do. That would be well appreciated. Until then, I wish you peace. Bye. Go. Go away. Oh, boy, huh? How do you talk about that?